This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
CAC looks to Intel for acceleration.
And SAS ups its analytics game.
Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for April 22nd, 2011. Available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined by Addison Snell of Intersect 360 Research. Hey, good morning, Addison.
Morning, Michael. I feel like I've been saying that for 2 years now.
I think you have. I think that's exactly right. We've been doing this for 2 years. So happy birthday or happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary. It's our 2 year anniversary, Michael. I didn't get you anything.
I didn't get you anything, but I'll blow out some candles in our honor.
Terrific. What do you got for us this week? Any good news after 2 years?
There's some good news this week. Some more recent than others, but on Thursday, which was just yesterday, the Texas Advanced Computing Center announced they're going to team up with Intel and start porting some of their big science codes to Intel's upcoming MIC processor, the many integrated cores processor that they've been talking about for what it seems like years now, since it used to be Larrabee and now it's MIC.
Yep.
So they're going to start porting a bunch of their codes over there. In fact, they've already started this. And to check out the performance, and they're going to build a MIC cluster later in the year, and they're going to follow that up with a commercial MIC, a real MIC cluster when they get the commercial parts from Intel, probably sometime closer to 2012. So, interesting development attack. They seem like they're very excited about this, and they're starting work on it. What do you kind of take?
You know, TAC has always been one of my favorite sites. First of all, I try to visit them whenever I can. But the more importantly, Intel is finally returning fire in the accelerator game here. They've been taking it from NVIDIA for 2 years now, and it takes Intel a long time to aim the howitzer. But when they finally do, it can be an effective weapon. And finally, we got a shot going back the other way.
Yeah, this is a good thing for Intel. I mean, they've got I think they've had like 100 MIC software developers for their development platform, which is called Knights Ferry. They've accumulated I think over 100 over the past year or so. But this is really the first big organization that's kind of gone all in on this, and it's going to be a lot more extensive than just porting one or two applications. They're going to port a lot of them and really get some good proof points, hopefully, for Intel and point to this and say, look at the performance, look at how easy it was to port to this, and all sorts of things. So it's a nice move for Intel, and I think they're looking down the line to do more things like this.
It's a really important move for Intel. We're estimating that about 5 to 7% of systems by node count, essentially, were accelerated with NVIDIA processors in 2010. So it's still a small percentage, but it's a growing percentage, and a lot of people still testing it out, but also a lot of people struggling with the programming model still. And, you know, we've been saying that this is getting to a tipping point where a lot of people are looking at all of that acceleration and saying it's worthwhile to go for it. Let's buy stuff and start figuring out how to program it. But that, you know, we've also been cautioning people, don't assume that just because that's been all NVIDIA so far that it's going to continue to be all NVIDIA, because you've got most notably Intel many integrated cores on the horizon, then also AMD Fusion in the mix. And we've been saying publicly that we think the big war is going to be Intel MIC versus NVIDIA in 2012, with AMD in there also still slugging it out. So really important first shot here, prior to product availability, and I'm very excited to see how it goes.
Yeah, I think I'm excited to see how this is going to turn out. I mean, they just started this. Obviously, Intel is, you know, it's a couple of years behind at this point. I mean, basically, NVIDIA brought GPU computing mainstream over the last year. It's not, like you said, it's not deployed all over the place, but basically, it's offered all over the place. Every vendor, HPC vendor out there, is offering NVIDIA-style GPU computing, and so Intel doesn't have anything to offer commercially right now. So they are behind. But, you know, I talked to tax deputy director, Dan Stanzione, and he was very high on this technology. He seemed very enthusiastic about how easy it was to port the few codes and benchmarks they've gotten going to the new MIC processor. It's basically an x86 processor, just kind of stripped down and vectorized and souped up for parallel processing, but it's basically x86. So it's rather easy to port existing codes over there. And he says, you know, right, to get something working, it's a matter of minutes. To optimize things, you got to tweak it a little bit, but it's a really fast port.
Well, and TAC has experience with this. I mean, they've had GPU accelerator systems in there. First, a smaller one that they were trying to get people to port applications on. Now they've got a larger one that's, I think, primarily a visualization system, but they were also experimenting with acceleration there. So, you know, when they say, if TAC is saying it's a lot easier to port on MIC than it is on a straight out GPU, that they're speaking with experience there.
Right. They've done some porting with CUDA now, and more recently OpenCL. I mean, they've got, like you said, that big GPU system. I think it has 512 GPUs on it. So they're starting to port some of their codes and visualization software onto that, using that system, and some smaller systems as well. And you know, Dan said basically they're going to be able to do some compare and contrast with the two different ports. It's not going to be one to one as far as application
Certainly.
Against application, but I think they're going to accumulate enough experience to make some pretty broad generalizations about performance, porting ease, and things like that. So that'll be interesting.
Right. They will have done all three, and they'll be able to say, here's our experience porting in each of these paradigms, as you said, with CUDA, with OpenCL, and now with Intel MIC. Now, Intel, they haven't formally said, here's what the porting mechanism is, I don't think, other than to say that it's a straightforward extension of the Intel tools, and they've got the code name around all the software.
Right. I think it's basically, from what Dan talked about, it's a fairly easy port from their side. I mean, Intel does have its own tools. It even has some of its own language environments to do some of that are a little bit newer. But basically, if you have an OpenMP program, it's basically one-to-one port. It's like instead of having four cores, you now have 32 on the Knights Ferry, and you'll have over 50 on the commercial platform, over 50 cores on the commercial version when it comes out next year. So it's just a matter of, you know, increasing the core count. But OpenMP basically transfers or migrates easily to this new platform. So once your code is written for that, you're sort of home free, and you're just doing tweaking and some reconfiguration and, you know, putting some directives to offload it. It is a coprocessor, so you have to, you know, transfer the functions and the data over to the MIC coprocessor on the PCI bus. But it's pretty straightforward. It's not like CUDA where you're sort of starting from scratch, in a sense. You're rewriting the code to get that parallelization over there. You've gotten over the hump in this case.
Well, you know, it'll be a little early at ISC, but even before supercomputing, TAC is going to play host to the IEEE Cluster 2011 conference at the end of September. It's going to be in Austin. TAC is our host, so I wonder if they'll have anything interesting to tell us there.
Yeah, I wonder too. I think they did say they're going to be able to talk about this at SC, and I think Intel too is going to be announcing more news about the MIC platform in the upcoming months, and maybe even at ISC. It looks like they're going to have some news. Maybe they're going to kind of give better guidance on when the first commercial silicon starts to come out. But yeah, this is picking up for Intel, and I think we're gonna see more news about this in the upcoming months.
Well, and we'll see more news with GPUs at ISC also, in particular on our analyst Crossfire panel that'll wrap up the show. One of my panelists will be Satoshi Matsuoka from Tytech, and that Tsubame 2 HP system, of course, is a huge GPU system. So I'm interested in getting Satoshi's view of these things.
Yeah, that is definitely not standing still as well. I'm sure the GPU guys will be there in full force as well.
Yeah, definitely. What else we got?
Well, the other big story I sort of covered this week, which actually was announced earlier this month, but SAS Institute, the big analytics firm, has integrated.
Yeah, SAS has been showing up more and more recently here.
Yeah, I seem to have been reading more about them recently, and in this case, they made sort of a couple of quiet announcements, but it's sort of big news that I think, especially for the high-performance analytics and predictive analytics space, they basically took their analytics technology, their advanced analytics technology, and integrated it with two popular high-performance analytics platforms, appliances. The one from EMC, Greenplum. Greenplum used to be on its own, and EMC bought it a while back. And Teradata Corporation. They both have these basically HPC-type cluster/appliances for databases, and SAS has integrated its advanced analytics on top of that. And the idea being that, you know, to sort of marry this HPC analytics idea with the platforms and be able to do sort of in-database analytics on the platform itself rather than on the client side and trying to download stuff and doing a more complex workflow. So they consider this somewhat of a game changer. And then, you know, SAS is very well known in the analytics market, especially at the high end, this compute intensive analytics. So it ought to be an interesting development to see who kind of signs on to this and then what kind of customer base they start attracting with this.
Yeah, analytics and particularly predictive analytics is just going to be a very big deal across HPC. Of course, it's most associated with high-performance business computing applications. And Sue Korn on our team has an article on HPC Wire this week about opportunities in predictive analytics. When you go into finance, we track four different HPC application areas. Trading, of course, is an obvious one. Pricing, risk management is a very big area. And then analytics, which kind of goes across a lot of the sectors, is very horizontal. And in particular, predictive analytics, Sue does an excellent job pointing out that in a lot of what you're trying to do in your enterprise is find needles in haystacks. And the idea of predictive analytics is to burn off 90% of the hay. And, you know, let's make the needles a little easier to find. It's not going to pick up the needle for you, but it'll make it easier for you to go that last yard and pick that out. And there's opportunities for this not only in finance, but in a lot of areas that go beyond that in other high-performance business computing and even high-performance technical computing applications.
Right. It seems to really be a big opportunity right now. I'm hearing about it more and more. And like you said, it's not just finance, although Sue wrote that article and really spelled out the opportunity there across that. But yeah, we're looking in, you know, there's government fraud, which is a huge amount of money involved. There's customer relationships, acquisition. There's all sorts of things.
Right.
Basically, any company that does any sort of business intelligence at all can use this sort of high-end analytics, the predictive analytics
CRM. Sorry, I interrupted. But CRM, customer relationship management, is a big one, right? Because it's not just the traditional stuff of how can I acquire a new customer or which customers am I about to churn, but also looking at the pockets of customers that you've got and analyzing which, you know, how much should I price my packages for one customer group versus another? Or are there particular bundles that are attractive in different areas? Oh, there's a lot of business management that goes into CRM.
Right. In fact, Amazon, you know, uses this pretty extensively. I don't know to what level. I'm not sure what the packages are. I know SAS is sold into Amazon. They have a package there, but they use it. And if anybody's ever used Amazon, they'll know that if you ever bought a book or a product from them, you know, you get prodded every once in a while through email saying, you know, we think you'll like this and this and this since you bought this. And, you know, just from my point of view, they're pretty accurate. They've nailed it pretty well down just based on the little information I've given them, and I haven't given them that much, plus my buying profile. And so there's a lot of compute crunching going on behind the scenes there to do that. But it looks like, you know, it looks like some intelligent person in back there is picking my next potential buys from them.
They've been listening to your podcast for 2 years, Michael. They know that you want to watch a computer be a judge on American Idol.
Yeah, well, that too, yeah. It's not that sophisticated, but yeah. So it's amazing. Any of these e-retailers are very interested in this technology. The telecoms are very interested. I know when I talked to the SaaS fellows, they talked about cable companies are very concerned about people going to different providers and figuring out, you know, what kinds of offers and other things to to present them with so that to prevent that sort of thing. So
definitely telecom, a big user. But then coming back to SaaS, you know, I was at the HPC and Biomed conference last October, I think it was, you know, that Harvard organizes. And SaaS was a sponsor and had one of their customers up and talking. So they're, you know, here you're doing predictive analytics in Biomed, which is another big potential area and a square in the middle of high-performance technical computing.
Right, and my impression is SaaS is basically the industry leader in this area of advanced analytics, or this area of analytics, I should, or business analytics.
Yeah, there are a lot of other small players, but SaaS is the big name.
Right, they're right now big. I mean, IBM's into this, obviously Microsoft, Oracle, and some smaller players. In fact, there's a lot of smaller players, but right now SaaS is at the top, and I think it intends to stay there.
Yeah, I think they do.
So, Michael, you're talking about Amazon with regards to SaaS, and of course, Amazon has been in the news a little bit this week. Maybe we can wrap up that with a little quote of the week, too.
Okay, go for it.
Well, you know, so the big thing is that Amazon EC2 has been in the news the last 24 hours. They've been having significant outages that have been affecting a lot of people's websites. And
right,
I think this
right.
is interesting because, you know, this is a lot of people say we're going to go to the cloud because then we know we're going to have the infrastructure is always there and I don't have to manage it. We've heard a lot of debates with people saying, yeah, but what if it's not there? And they say, well, come on, if it's Amazon, it's going to be there, right?
Right. I mean, Amazon talks about the elastic cloud, and that sort of implies that, you know, when one part of the system goes down, you're going to be able to migrate over to another part. But in this case, that didn't quite happen. It was such that these websites were hooked into a certain area of the cloud, and they went down with the cloud.
Yep. When we've done qualitative research on cloud and quantitative as well, but in the qualitative interviews, we talked to one manufacturing company with an entry-level high-performance computing infrastructure who said, if I go and use the cloud to run my application, I'm not going to have any decent infrastructure. I might have some older machine, but if something happens with those companies, and this can happen any minute, what's going to happen to us? So, you know, here's where you're looking at someone who's saying, you know, the problem with outsourcing all of this is I don't have anything to fall back on when there's an outage.
Yeah, and I've heard that argument a lot, but I have to think that, you know, you can say the same thing if you're insourcing. If you're buying a cluster from a vendor and you have all the same problems, the vendor can go out of business, your system can go down, your support can run out. You have all the same problems. It's just more local to you, and you think at least you have more control over that. But a lot of the things you don't have control. In this case, it just seems more remote because it's out there somewhere where you can't touch it, and maybe to a vendor that you're not as familiar with. But you know, cluster vendors go out of business, they drop support, systems break. The same things happen inside your data center that happens outside your data center.
Well, yeah, that's true. But there's still a sense of responsibility and accountability with all this. You know, when it's under my control, I know who's responsible for it. And when you get it in that arm's reach, this is the same reaction to people are having with Google inventing cars that drive themselves, right?
Right.
You know, it could be way safer than the safest human driver, but the second there's one accident, someone's going to say, well, a human driver could have avoided that.
Right, right. Yeah, some of it's a matter of perception. It's like you have to be convinced that this is going to be the same type of experience you're used to, that certainly doesn't have any more pitfalls than the ones you're already familiar with. But in a lot of cases, it's a matter of time changing sort of your
right.
cultural bias. So I think this might be one of those cases. I mean, Amazon does not look good here because, you know, they lost some a lot of computer time for some mission-critical customers.
They got egg on their cloud.
Yeah, they got egg on their cloud. It's ugly if that even sounds. But, you know, this shouldn't come as a shock to anybody. And everybody has this problem already in their data centers. They just think they treat it differently because it's their problem. They've already kind of taken it into account. You know, HPC data centers, you know, it's not like these supercomputers stay up 24/7 for a year at a time. They go down. They go down in the middle of a run. That's why HPC users do checkpoints. They know systems are coming down, and they account for that.
I get that, but the fact that it's a perception issue doesn't mean you can ignore it. This is going to give a lot of ammunition to the anti-cloud arguments.
Yeah, I agree with that. It is going to give that kind of ammunition. Yep. Well, I think we should wrap it up this week. That was a good set of news. I think we've got a lot more coming up in the coming weeks as the news is coming up as we kind of ramp up to ISC in a couple months. So I think things are just beginning, and we'll be talking to you soon, next week, in fact.
Next week and for another 2 years.
And for another 2 years, hopefully more than that. Very good, Addison.
Thanks a lot, Michael.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.